The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook if you sign up for a two-week trial of their service. Audible has 40,000 titles available to download. For all the details, follow the links at guardian.co.uk/audible.
The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Music Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alexis Petridis, and coming up in today's podcast, Brian Ferry tells us about his new album Olympia, why songwriting makes him lonely, and how art still fuels his work. In Singles Club, we've got NERD, Big Deal, and Arthur Russell, and LA psych popper Ariel Pink on moving away from lo-fi, cross-dressing, and having limited career expectations. Who would think that a cross-dressing lo-fi artist might have limited career expectations? That's all in Music Weekly. Hello to Rosie Swash.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm all right, actually. I'm fine. I'm grand. Editor of Film and Music, The Guardian. Michael Hann is here.
Hello, Alexis. Hello, Rosie.
let's crack straight on with it. Roxy Music's Brian Ferry recently released a new solo album, Olympia. Features an array of collaborations, including tracks with Groove Armada, Marcus Miller and Manny. The other members of Roxy Music, including Brian Eno, crucially also feature on the record. Rosie spoke to Brian about the record, but first, let's have a listen to a track from the album. This is Shameless, featuring Groove Armada.
Obviously, we're here to talk about your new album, and quite possibly one of the most noticeable, remarkable things about it is the lineup of musicians that you have assembled. Having read, you know, read interviews with you in the past and what you've had to say about working with other people, yeah. I feel like I'm looking at this album and it's as if you just decided, let's have quite a lot of fun with this one. is that
well,
okay?
Kind of. And the thing is that the tracks were all kind of started at different times, even though they were kind of joined. They joined the party, if you like, and all ended up in the same spot, i.e. at the finishing line. But they were kind of quite separate tracks. Some of them I'd written myself. Some were co-writes with other people, you know, collaborations with other people. And a couple of covers thrown in for good measure, that sort of thing. And but it's interesting how they were all the these varied pieces fell under the same kind of. They all kind of seemed to fit together in the end, is what I'm trying to say.
So there was no plan.
No plan. Of course not.
I remember seeing you, I think it was a BPI award for songwriting, and in your acceptance speech you said something which struck me as quite unusual for a musician to say, which was that you found songwriting could be a bit lonely and boring. And it's a very honest thing to say, because songwriters will have us believe that is the, you know, that's the total opposite of what it is. Do you still feel that way?
It's my least favourite part of the process.
Why?
Because I prefer working with other people. I prefer kind of being in the studio once I've, you know, brought the songwriting ideas to the studio and then start working on them and extending the ideas, you know, developing them and with other, you know, with different musicians and so on. One of the most fun things of all is when I'm working with other singers, and the girls, normally girls' voices, because they're kind of a lot of fun. You know, there's a lot of laughter and carrying on, and I like that.
I mean, you've talked before, well, the notion of one of the drives behind Roxy Music forming or existing was the synergy between your love of art and the art world and music, and synergizing those two worlds. And I wondered if that differs from your impulse, your drive to make music now?
Not really. It feels very much the same as it ever was. I just like making things, and sad there aren't any record shops to display them in anymore. So we're finding new ways, I guess, to reach people. But I just do like making things, and by that, as well as making the music, you know, wrapping it up in some way. And so the book that goes with the record, I'm very pleased with. And it's funny that it's taken us 40 years before we got around to doing one, something like that. In the old days, of course, record companies weren't interested in that kind of thing. Now they are, you know. I don't know if you've seen it, but this time we did kind of liner notes in the thing, and in the book, and also a kind of essay on the art side of it, and the Manet painting in particular.
Which inspired the Kate Moss cover of the...
Yeah, I mean, it probably inspired all my covers, actually, subconsciously, I think, because it's one of those pictures I remember being taken by as an art student, and, you know, because it was a very modern, arresting image, and it did stand out from other 19th century some pictures of that time.
Roxy Music doesn't sound passé in the way that some music from the 60s and 70s would sound to younger ears. It's never reached that point where you think, okay, this is incredibly played out and I don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, yeah, ageism is a funny thing. I mean, it exists very strongly in radio in this country.
Well, it's strange that it
I don't know if you know that, but there aren't any DJs anymore. You know, people who kind of sit in a room, you know, because I've been to radio stations a million times, where, especially in America, where they have kind of masses of records surrounding them, and they just go and grab something. Oh, let's see, play this. And it's a kind of interesting, creative thing, job. But nowadays, it's all done by committees, and say, oh, we don't play that on our channel, our station. So we found it real tough, actually, getting the record played. It's been quite surprising, in a way, considering it's had such wonderful reviews overall.
That was Brian Ferry with Rosy. Man, he was smooth, wasn't it? I'm amazed he could. I'm amazed the receiver didn't slip off his head. The phone receiver, he was so smooth. Interesting. I thought it had some interesting points to make there. Very much kind of the venerable older dude, isn't he, Brian Ferry? I think that's one of the things I like about him, is that he's sort of wearing his age quite well. He's not like jumping around like Mick Jagger and pretending to be younger than he actually is.
But he was kind of born to age, wasn't he? At first with Roxy Music, everyone thought that the whole country squire thing was this piece of postmodernist appropriation. In fact, it rapidly became apparent, in fact, he wanted to be country squire.
Little did they know they were dealing with Britain's most upwardly mobile Geordie. No, I think that's sort of fascinating. I think the way that I think that happens to a lot of rock stars, and I think maybe it happens to Damon Albarn as well. You start playing a role, and there comes a point where the role just takes over you and you become that. It's the David Bowie not knowing where Ziggy Stardust began and ended thing. And I always thought that was sort of what happened to Damon Albarn. And I wonder if that's kind of what happened to Brian Ferry, if he just wanted to go shooting.
Yes, but the odd thing, his music sounds like a lifestyle choice as well. They sound less like records than coffee table accessories. You almost expect to see them in a catalogue from an upscale furniture store. I don't know, it leaves me a bit cold.
I disagree. I really like it. And in a weird way, I love Roxy, the records they made with Eno, and I love Country Life and that kind of thing. But recently, with, as regular listeners to the podcast will know, my love of smooth music, I've really started... Avalon is like an amazing album. Because it's like that, but it's really weird as well. It sounds like music, a really coked up yuppie would end up listening to at 5 o'clock in the morning while having some kind of nervous breakdown. It's absolutely brilliant. Rosie, are you a fan?
I am a fan. I was just surprised that Michael said that he wasn't so into the first two Roxy Music albums, because the very first one, Roxy Music, is my favourite of all of them. Oh. And I still, when I listen to it, I still think it sounds incredibly fresh.
Oh, yeah.
And I can only imagine what it sounded like. What something like, if there is something sounded like at the time.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's a thing, there's a great story about Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols seeing Roxy Music on either Top of the Pops, the Old Grey Whistle Test, while he was in Borstal in like 1972 or 73, and thinking, you know, sitting there, he said he sat there and he was like, this is just amazing. This looks like it's come from outer space. And everybody around him was like, who's these puffs? You know, it was like, not the cool thing to like. Tell you what I've always wondered about Brian Ferry. The vocal style, which is, you know, a very influential, very mannered sound. I wonder how he came by that. Do you think he just turned up one day? He sang normally and then came to a Roxy Music rehearsal one day and started, I think
actually it's a real northeastern thing. If you look at Vic Reeves and the club singer in Shooting Stars, really very
point.
Similar.
I hadn't thought about that, actually. Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it is. Yeah, I like the album. Olympia by Brian Ferry is out now. It's time for Singles Club now. Rosie, Michael and myself have, as ever, each brought in a track to discuss. Let's start off with the track chosen by... You know what I'm doing here? I'm building up the tension.
Sorry.
It's like, yeah, I notice you gazing out the window. It's meant to
just
be like the bit on X Factor where they go, I'm sending home... Not Katie Waisel, obviously.
We need some background music to ratchet up the tension.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think that when I come on, they should play that Old Spice music like they do when the judges come on the next one. Anyway, start again. This track was chosen by... Michael.
Where have your clothes gone? Why are you late? When you're not around, I suffocate. When all is hopeless, when all else fails, you ruin my ending. It's ruined. I know there's not much you can count on. So always.
That was Homework by Big Deal. That's not the most inspiring title for a Homework, a Big Deal.
it's a terrible name for a band, isn't it?
Big Deal.
I think they're a really interesting band.
Who are they? Who are they? Tell me about them.
He is 32. He's American. He's called Casey Underwood. She's 18, yeah. Blonde and attractive. She's called Alice Costello.
I'm calling these the world.
Well, what one might
surrounded
use
by people waving badly spelt placards.
One might use the genre name Lolita Pop, since the B-side of this is a cover of 13 by Big Star. They've also got a song called Lunch Money. There's a certain uncomfortable fixation with youth, but I think the discomfort is quite an important part of it, because it's kind of woozy, sexy music, but you're undercut by the fact that, hang on, there's this age gap between them. The songs are, you know, Homework is about feeling being distracted from your homework by feeling lustful. But I think it's very beautiful stuff. It's in a pop classicist line. You've got the Velvets, Juice and Mary Chain, Mazzy Star, I think, especially in there.
Mm, wow.
I think the songwriting is genuinely very, very good. Mm. It'll be interesting to see whether anything can happen for them. This single has come out on a ludicrously limited release 7-inch.
Who's put it out?
Records.
Wow.
Great name for a label.
Not Records.
The Motown of the 2010s. And it's a rather nice package. The 7-inch sleeve is done up like an exercise book cover, and it's all hand-drawn. My copy has a cover of Dinosaur on. I paid cash money for it the other night, not a freebie.
Wow.
I like this band enough to pay my own money for them.
Wow. Rosie, how does this sit with you?
Well, I didn't know about the background stuff, so I had quite
and
a different...
And now I hate it.
Yeah, no, now I like it, because before I just thought it was so conscious of what it was trying to do. And now, obviously, you've given me filled out a few more of the blanks, and you think, well, yeah, of course it is, because it's trying maybe to unnerve you a little bit. And also possibly taking the piss out of other, you know, music being made in this ilk, which is tapping so explicitly into nostalgia, and it's kind of saying, okay, let's... Because all their other songs aren't acoustic. There's quite a lot of...
There's nothing with drum. It's always two guitars, but sometimes it's... there's a lot more electric on some of the other
and
stuff.
And I prefer the other stuff because it kind of nullifies the sweetness a little bit. But yeah.
I'm intrigued. Is there a wave Because we had Perfume Genius, we've had him, we've discussed him on the show, Mr. Peterson's song about a paedophile. You know, there seems to be an interesting angle of American singer-songwritery types who are attempting, and because the rest of the Perfume Genius album, I don't know if you've heard it, has like songs about Mary Bell, who was a child murderer, a kid who murdered a couple of other children, I think. And I wonder if there's something trying to be disquieting. You know,
yeah, I think this is slightly different because, you know, the songs are, so, I'm not sure what the songwriting relationship division is, but the woman in Big Deal is plainly the kind of vocal focal point. The songs are being sung from her perspective. So I think, you know, having a teenage girl singing about teenage sexuality actually renders it rather different from, you know, definitely a man singing about an older man's reactions to teenage sexuality.
Those lyrics, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
I think it's interesting that in that sort of field of kind of, you know, American indie, which has a tendency towards good taste.
We should say they're London-based, this group.
They sound like he's
American, she's English.
That whole area of music has a tendency to sort of, as I said, to kind of good taste, you know, tastefulness, sort of things that, you know, older guys like and all that kind of thing. It's interesting to see people trying to disrupt that a little bit.
Did you like it, Alexis?
I did like it, actually, yeah. I mean, before you mentioned it, it was appalling moral standpoint.
But that's the point. It's about our reactions. It's not an appalling moral standpoint of itself. You know, a girl who a year ago was doing her homework, talking about feeling lustful while doing her homework. It's our reactions as people who are not 17 that makes it feel uncomfortable. That's the thing. It's about our own voyeurism.
Levels, Alexis, levels upon levels. No, I agree. I think it's good. I think it's interesting. Homework by Big Deal is out now. And now let's listen to Rosie's Choice. Like Anne Widdecombe, as everything got to be on this program, got to be about sex.
Is that a song about sex?
Inside you. What do you think he means there?
I'm behind you. Now I'm going to hypnotise you. Aww. I'm going to dabba 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 dooba doo you, or something.
Touch, whatever.
That was Nerd, NERD.
Yeah.
Hypnotise You.
Produced by Daft Punk.
Interesting. So you've got a band featuring one of the most famous producers in the world.
Produced by
someone else. That's really intriguing because I've always thought with Nerd, you could see what they were trying to do.
Exactly.
And it's never really panned out because ultimately it usually ends up sounding like new metal.
And it's too many ideas there. And Pharrell, I think, can not always make the most convincing frontman.
No.
I think when they get it right with I'm Provider.
An absolutely charmless man, Pharrell, I think. And he's charmless on stage. And I met him and he's charmless in person as well.
You know, I always felt like they should have ticked more boxes than they did. Yeah. And early on, particularly with the first album, it looked incredibly promising. And then I think they just fell into, you know, they made it much too much about party music. They fell into their own hype a little bit. And I had no expectations whatsoever for this album. And I think this song's absolutely fantastic. I'm almost certainly because of what Daft Punk have done with it and because it's a really simple refrain throughout. It is pretty sexy. I think it's very good. But another thing that made me want to bring them in was, have you guys seen the hype about Odd Future recently, this hip-hop group from LA? Odd Future have some similarities to what Nerd were quite in the beginning, the kind of skater LA hip-hop collective group. And Tyler, the creator, who's the kind of lead MC of Odd Future, is always saying how much he absolutely loves Nerd. But they are, it's like Gravediggers, so it's like extremely offensive. Like it's all about, you know, rape and corpses and drinking corpses. You know, it's just, it's really... So it's weird for me because a lot of people were kind of mentioning Nerds to see this something that's on so far of a revolting tangent.
Yeah.
But their lead MC is apparently obsessed with Nerd.
It's intriguing. Michael, what did you make of this? I like this more. I've got to say, I like this more than I think I've liked any Nerd record since the first version of their first album, which never actually came out, which I've never known.
Oh, you hipster.
No. They sent it out as a promo and it was brilliant. Mm. And then they took it away and re-recorded it with a band and totally recorded the album and absolutely ruined it, I thought.
Well, I never heard that version.
Right, so
I used to like She Likes to Move. It's my favourite. I'm sorry, there you go. That's a nerd single I like.
It's intriguing. See, I can't imagine you sitting at home listening to like Lap Dance or whatever. Maybe you do.
Hey, there's hidden depths. In fact, I was watching the video for this in which Pharrell wanders around his mansion surrounded by young women in their underwear doing sort of press-ups and things as he makes hand gestures to them, thinking how like my own home life that is. I really like the record. It has a kind of warm, it's like a warm bath of sensuality, if you like, into which I would slip fully clothed. But you know, it's
interesting. While reading the Bible,
when we were talking about you know, sexuality in the previous single, and yet the fact, because this is an R&B / hip hop record, the sexuality in the video. I mean, frankly. There's an age when we would have found that appallingly offensive.
It is definitely offensive.
But, you know, it just slips by, you know, because that's what we expect from hip-hop and R&B, isn't it? But I think Daft Punk must take a lot of credit, because it's the sound of the record that makes it amazing. The restraint.
When's that out, Rosie?
I think it's out now.
Is it out now?
Out now.
Go out and buy it if you like it. And this is my choice. Every step is moving me up. 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 Arthur Russell's This Is How We Walk on the Moon. That's a re-edit, a fairly dramatic remix of Arthur Russell's This Is How We Walk on the Moon. And I found that on a blog called AOR Disco. If you type AOR Disco into Google, you'll find it, which is full of amazing remixes.
A blog that combines AOR and disco. It's just made for you.
I know.
I'm surprised you could tear yourself away to come in.
This is slightly off kilter for that blog, because a lot of it does what it says in the tin. It's kind of remixes of, you know, 70s soft rock and things like that. I brought this in A because I think this is just a beautiful, beautiful remix. The original is gorgeous as well. The original, if you haven't heard it, is basically Arthur Russell accompanying himself on the cello with a bit of kind of Indian drumming, I think, and that's pretty much it. This year I've really got into Arthur Russell. I knew his stuff before, but this year I've really started listening to a lot of his stuff. I find it a very beautiful, moving record in its own right, and I think this remix has made it dance floor friendly without actually losing anything. It still seems to me this is a sensual record. This is a kind of lovely, woozy, post-coitally kind of sensual record. It doesn't all have to be about I'm standing behind you and banging you and all this kind of thing, and I'm on stage with an 18-year-old chick pretending to be all this. This is loveliness. This is nice. And it's free. You can just download it from the site. Rosie.
I feel you're kind of cheating bringing in Arthur Russell.
Yeah, I win Singles Club, I think, by doing this.
I agree with you on all the points about what it does with the original, and also I've even got the word sensual written down as if I would forget it. I think when I went back and listened to the original again in reference to this, the other thing that Arthur Russell does in it, which is so enjoyable to listen to, is you can almost hear him playing around with his own vocals just as he goes. It's not contrived at all. It's just seeing what he can do as it goes along. Mm-hmm. And it's a total joy to listen to. And I feel like this takes that oddness and just moves it around a bit. It doesn't take anything away from the original, so you can't
complain. While adding quite a lot of stuff to it. I mean, the whole backing has been added to it.
Yeah, it's basically the avant-garde status quo, isn't it? He started off doing one thing, you know, with his cello that's vaguely mind-altering. That's his Pictures of Matchstick Men phase. Then he reinvented himself with the Four on the Floor stuff, which became his down-down Mean Girl phase, you know.
This is like he's in the army now, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm waiting for the Arthur Russell Margarita time. That's the point at which I finally.
It's an amazing record, Margarita Time.
I have a lot of sympathy for the quo. This is the thing. You think
Why are we talking about status quo?
Mainly, Rosie, because I could not think of a single new thing to say about Arthur Russell, because he's a kind of sacred cow of pop. It is lovely. It's a lovely record, but I have little more to add than that, other than to make the hopefully Alexis riling comparison to status quo.
No, man, I love the quo. I'm unriled. If you don't own Arthur Russell's original albums, go out and buy Another Thought and World of Echo and Love is Overtaking Me. In fact, just go out and
if you can only buy one, this would be helpful to me. If you can only buy one,
There was a soul jazz compilation that came out about 8 years ago that I think is still available, and that's got an overview, because that's got the disco stuff, it's got some of the weird avant-garde stuff, it's got da-da. I think it's called World of Arthur Russell. Right. In terms of songs, Love is Overtaking Me is the one. That's the kind of weird soft rock thing that he did. They're just brilliant. They will enrich your life beyond compare. Gap and buy. Some comments now on last week's Motown-themed show. The 16th Beatle posted, "Finally, a Music Weekly that doesn't feature bloody dubstep." KG writes, "Excellent blog. I could pick a few holes." Feel free, KG. Go on, pick a few holes, mate. "I Want You" is essentially an already recorded Leon Ware album. I didn't know that. "Nevertheless, well done for celebrating the greatest music of the 20th century. The interesting question for me is that black music essentially drove the entire 20th century music culture. From blues to jazz to rock and roll to rhythm and blues to soul to funk to hip-hop, it was all driven by black music. So why do I feel that black music is in its least creative, worst state it's ever been? Or am I just a sad old git?" Interesting point. I don't know whether I'd agree with that. I think, you know, over the last kind of a decade or so, if you wanted the real kind of cutting edge pop music, it's usually a bit R&B or hip hop based. What I did notice the other day when I was listening to Radio 1 is that everything has caught up with everything else, and so your pop records all sound like, you know, the new single by whoever, Nelly or whatever. So it's very difficult to listen to because everything's using the same sounds. Yeah, anyway. Norman Whitfield, the socially opportunist producer, doubtless picking up on the impending Watts riots. Marvin Gaye going against anything the label founder had to say, and Smokey Robinson, who John Lennon also cited as America's greatest poet. Fabulous stuff. My choices would be "How Sweet It Is to Be Loved to You" by the Elgins, a superbly accomplished lead vocal by Saundra Edwards on a familiar backing track. And while we're about it, the Elgins again on Heaven Must Have Sent You. Great record, that. Just dream on Amy Winehouse. Thanks for your comments. Remember, guardian.co.uk/musicweekly is the place to leave them. Time for our next artist interview now. Ariel Pink is an LA-based musician known for being the king of lo-fi, recording psychedelic pop tracks using the most basic technology in his bedroom. Before Today, a studio album released in the summer, was a departure from this lo-fi sound and came out on 4AD Records. Ben Beaumont Thomas caught up with Ariel to ask him about the move to a more produced sound.
"We're just a couple notches below hi-fi, the highest fi that you can get, so... I don't think it's really much of a goal insofar as getting more hi-fi. It has nothing to do with hi-fi. You can be hi-fi in a second nowadays, so it's not really the goal. The goal is to make it sound good, and if it sounds good, I guarantee you, my stuff sounding hi-fi does not mean it sounds good."
"Looking at your videos and your live show, you have half of you is sort of buttoned down, like classic sort of US indie look, I guess, and then you have this rather extravagant, glittery glam vibe that occasionally comes out. Have you always got that sort of look batting back and forth in your mind?"
"Maybe, yeah. I mean, I think it's a little bit of my the side of me that wants to. I feel like I'm like I'd be a really hot chick. You know, if I was a girl, but like the other side of me is like, you know, just Paul Bunyan has to have like, you know, his plaid shirt and his belt and all that kind of thing."
There was that track "Menopause Man" where you kind of sort of fantasized about being a lady. Is that have you ever kind of really thought about going into the transvesticism route?
"I've thought about it. Yeah. I mean, you know." I go back and forth about it, but honestly, I think that's a natural thing. I think the back and forth is really the point, not really so much one or the other. Because I think girls can be pretty manly too, when they're not very hot.
"Playing in a kind of medium-sized, well, pretty large-sized venue in London, being a kind of milestone, have there been other sort of waypoints along your sort of journey where you thought, oh my God, I'm really making it now?"
I thought that the first time I was interviewed. I thought I had made it the first time I got interviewed. The first time I got signed to Paw Tracks, I thought I made it. So my standards have been far exceeded since then.
And have you raised them?
Have I raised my expectations?
Yeah.
Well, I've raised doing it enough. I've actually kind of like... to where it's like really, really the only thing that I know how to do now is just this kind of like, it's a very kind of, I have to be a little bit more discerning with who I decide to talk to and that kind of thing, and to not just kind of like do favors for people because they're giving me like they're like licking my ass and stuff like that. So that kind of thing, like, it does build character for me. Because as far as I'm concerned, you know, I don't deserve it, which is what I believed back then. I still don't believe I deserve it, but it has nothing to do with deserving it. It has to do with just having the right idea about it or whatever. Okay, so like, I mean, if we were to become successful, I should just shrink away from it or something like that? Like, I should go stop? I mean, no. At the very least, if worst came to worst, I wouldn't be successful, and I'd be back in the same place I was when I started recording music, which is what everybody wants anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not much of a goal, is the point.
My favourite chorus of the year. That's Ariel Pink talking to Ben Beaumont Thomas there. He was an interesting chap. Also, respect to Ben BT going in studs up with the whole transvesticism angle. I am intrigued by Ariel Pink. The single, I think, is amazing, Round and Round. The album, bits of the album are absolutely amazing, and then bits of it are really annoying. And that seems to be very much his kind of thing. I've gone back and listened to some other albums by him, and there seems to be like quite a lot of annoying stuff on there as well.
Well, I owe Music Weekly thanks this week for the Ariel Pink album has been sitting around in my house for months, and I hadn't listened to it because I'd heard earlier lo-fi stuff and said, you know, there's some stuff there, but actually I can't face making the effort to uncover the gems. And his association with Animal Collective, who I'm one of those people who finds Animal Collective pretty well the most annoying group in the world. But in preparation for this, because I'm such a diligent investigative journalist, I actually took the album off the pile and put it in the CD player. I was bowled over by this album. And in fact, I didn't find any of it annoying. I thought it was consistently good. And the high points, Round and Round, which you just heard, the second track, I can't remember, which sounds like the Beach Boys, which I thought they were amazing, the high points. I mean, unfortunately, I voted for my top five albums of the year in the Guardian poll a matter of hours before I listened to this album, and actually my top five albums of the year might have been different.
You can resend them through my...
The first vote has to count, I think.
Rosie, are you a fan of Ariel Pink?
Well, the thing is, I always enjoy it on first listen. It's not my biggest compliment you could pay a musician, is it? But I remember him talking in an interview, maybe for this album, maybe for another one, about being in LA at the moment and trying to his take on pop culture, because there's very much that sense of maybe we've heard some of these melodies before, have we? The feeling that he's literally unearthing it in the track, and that's the way he manipulates it. And I think when he does it well, there's a kind of balminess to it, which I really, really like. But it never compels me to go back and listen to it again. I think of it more as a performance art piece than a kind of really
interesting,
really good album that I'd actually enjoy listening to. I can appreciate what it's doing.
I think that's fair
far
enough.
More. But I think, you know, the other thing about him is that he's been around for really a long time now. And part of what he does is a lot more prevalent in, I think, everything from the chillwave bands to like Chopped and Screwed and to Witch House, even to a degree, and all these kind of other little...
All these genres we invent.
Yeah, all these genres that we make up.
I think the interesting thing about it is how much of that he's almost spawned himself. I mean, lots of his recordings were made between 1998 and 2002. And half the songs on this album are re-recorded things that came out on cassettes, you know, eight, 9 years ago. So
yeah, exactly. I think, there's quite an interesting feature on Pitchfork called New Vocabulary, which is picking up on the way people are distorting vocals across all sorts of genres and using it as a kind of another instrument rather than making the vocals the foreground. And it just made me think he's just been doing this for years.
I've got to say, the kind of way he was manipulating sound and stuff like that, I hadn't really come across anybody doing anything like that before, which, you know, as we say every week on this show, when somebody brings in a sort of chill wave or a witch house record, it all sound like My Bloody Valentine. And I mean, you know, his records don't. And I think there's something, there's interesting stuff about buried childhood memories of kind of hearing things on badly tuned radios and all that kind of stuff that I find quite intriguing and appealing. You may find it intriguing and appealing too. If so, Before Today by Ariel Pink is out now on 4AD. That's all, folks. Great to see you, Michael. Lovely. Always a pleasure when you come in. We always have a few raffles.
I like talking about the pop music.
See you again next week, Rosie.
I will. I'll see you.
My thanks to producer Pete and producer Scott, two-handed production this week. I'm Alexis Petridis. Thanks for listening, Sensation Seekers.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.
Don't forget to start your free 14-day trial of audible.co.uk and to download your free audiobook. Head to guardian.co.uk/audible.